Some truths, he said, are safest buried. Some castles are best kept in the sky. There's promise in tales that are yet to be spoken.
Welcome back to another episode of Struggling Municipal Library's podcast, All Booked, where we talk to you about books we'd like to recommend.
And Danielle and I are here to talk about a book that I started off my year with. I said I was going to read 48 books this year, and I decided to start the year with an 800-page tome.
An 800-page tome. I see you now. You have a large brick of a book on your lap and a pile of papers on top of it. There are a number of post-its involved.
It comes with a glossary of characters, as well as multiple maps and I think definitions of some of the magical terms and stuff, and a timeline.
Exactly. And Danielle, phone out, ready to reference. People have come prepared today. So tell me a little bit. I know this is going to be a hard ask. Tell me a little bit about Priory of the Orange Tree by Samantha Shannon.
Yes. So before we talk about the characters, I wanted to say that this is an interesting retelling of St. George and the Dragon.
Oh,
so
okay.
In that one of the kingdoms, so this is true high fantasy. You have multiple kingdoms. You're following six or eight main characters across their journeys.
Eight. Yeah.
So one of the kingdoms is the Kingdom of Virtudom, and it is about a knight who slew the Nameless One, who is predicted to come back at the end of 1,000 years. But anyway, come to find out as you learn other countries' myths around what happened between the knight and the Nameless One, it was actually a woman that banished the Nameless One, and the knight took credit for it.
Oh.
So this is, as much as Virtudom is set up to be kind of a patriarchy, you've got a lot of strong women that are fighting the system, which is one of the things I appreciate about this book.
I think one of my favorite parts about it is that all the warriors who are tasked to take down said Nameless One are all women, and all the men are the one who are in charge of keeping everything together, because they don't have the ability to bear children. So they are seen not as less than, but as you have other duties rather than fighting, which is really interesting too.
So you said there are multiple kingdoms. Is this mostly taking place in the Kingdom of Virtudom, or are we getting perspectives from outside the kingdom?
So you get
as well?
Perspectives from east and west. So the western perspective is that dragons are bad because the Nameless One was bad with a capital B.
It's a dragon.
Yes. And they're referred to as worms in the western kingdom. And they get their power through the fire of the earth. In the east, dragons are revered, and they are described a lot more like Asian dragons, basically. So they are powered by starlight, and they are water dragons. In fact, you have one of the main characters, her name is Tane, who is training to become a dragon rider, and she gets to meet her dragon, Nyamathun, who is one of my favorite characters in the book. That relationship between the dragon and his rider is amazing. Good.
There's a lot more of it in the prequel, too, because it follows, spoilers to the prequel ahead, I guess, but it also follows a different dragon rider, but the first dragon rider, so that you get to see, I'm not going to butcher the dragon's name, but the dragon, you get to see them, their first time ever coming back, and, more of that character, and I was so excited, because I loved the dragon in the first book.
So we're following, I am assuming, these a few knights.
So here, I can start getting into the characters if you want.
I know, it's hard once you say six or seven people.
I know, each chapter kind of bounces between east and west. So east, you're mostly following Tane. You're also following a man named Nicolas Roos, who used to work in the west as an alchemist. He was promising to come up with the formula for immortality. But he was spending most of his money on wine and became exiled for failing in his attempts to come up with this. So he's in the east as well. Those are your two main characters over there. In the west, you are following Sabran, who is the newest queen of Virtudom, and she comes from the line from the maiden who was responsible for slaying the Nameless One originally, or banishing the Nameless One. Anyway, she is supposed to protect the kingdom by bearing a daughter, but right now she's mostly turning down suitors and stuff. And she is guarded secretly by my favorite character in the book, Ead, who is a mage from the Priory. But she has to keep her magical abilities under wraps. In fact, Sabran has no idea that she is quite a capable bodyguard, but she's the one dispatching people that are attempting to assassinate Sabran.
Okay. Yeah.
It's if you ever watched Merlin, where Merlin has to keep his power secret, but he still has to keep an eye on Arthur, it's that same exact kind of dynamic.
the same dynamic.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are a handful of the characters that we have. What is the, since this the dragon slaying was in the past. Dragon Banishing was in the past. What is the crux of this book? Like, what is the conflict that we're working towards?
We know the Nameless One is going to return.
Oh, is it the Thousand Years is coming up?
Yes.
Oh.
It's basically just a ticking time bomb. They're like, we know it's going to happen in the next X amount of time. We have to get everybody together, like, right now.
Yeah.
That's what the plot is. Yeah.
Okay.
So one other side character, or one other main character that I haven't even mentioned yet, is Loth.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
I love him.
He's great. He's great. So he is banished because he's like BFFs with Sabran, but clearly Sabran is on the market to, you know, marry somebody from another powerful kingdom, you know, for political purposes and stuff. So they want to get him out of the way so that nobody makes bad assumptions. Interestingly, they really just have a true close friendship.
Oh, yeah.
It's just been misconstrued. So anyway, he is sent on a suicide mission to go investigate the disappearance of, was it Sabran's father? Is that who it was? Like, it was, in this kingdom that has allied with the worms.
Okay.
The north part of the south.
The north part of the south.
I'm looking at, I'm envisioning the map in my head. I'm like, I know where it is.
Yeah. It's like the Virginia. They say they're in the south, but are they?
Kind of like that.
It's basically like the quote unquote, like, west is this little island, kind of like the UK. And then just below it is like the whole south, which is like kind of a European, like, Middle Eastern situation in terms of like culture and how the people.
Okay, so like the continent versus.
Yeah.
Okay. I imagine this is a book that has an extensive map.
It has multiple maps of both East and West. Mm-hmm. And then on top of it, you're like following pirates and dragons and like adventures across deserts. And then you've got all of these different countries with their folklore and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, reading it is a rich experience. It's not something that you can cram in and do like in a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
I savored it just because it took a while for everything to sink in. You know, each country has its own like mythos and like fables and stuff. And you're trying to piece these together to figure out what really happened 1,000 years ago so that they can hopefully defeat the Nameless One again.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the big part about all like the mythos and all that, it was really like intense at first because I started reading this not during a smart time, during like midterms into final season in undergrad, but I was like, I want to read this. And so there would be points in time where it was like 2 hours of me just sitting there and like slowly working through the book. And
you were like I'm studying again, but...
No, legitimately. And my friends would be like, how much did you read today? I'm like, about 7%.
7% of them.
Like, my tick went up just a little bit. But no, just how in-depth it is really like, I understand that's what you do with like high fantasy. But some of the stuff that was like so interwoven, I was like, oh, dang, like this goes deep. Like, she sat on this for years kind of thing.
And I saw this marketed at Target amongst all the romanticy and stuff.
Exactly.
This has a romantic plot in it.
Yeah.
But it really is true high fantasy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's a beautiful romance in the story. It is not front and center.
I'm never against people marketing Priory of the Orange Tree more because I do think, I haven't read it, but I do think it's very good. But it is very weird that it gets paired with romanticy because romanticy is very much like making out with fantasy around you. Whereas this is very like, and 17 years ago.
No, exactly. There's an extensive timeline.
Yes.
Like, it goes break by break of like, this is when the Nameless One failed. This is when this country started. This is when this happened. This is when that happened. And it's like, yeah, that's what comes first. The romance is very good, but it's very much on the back burner compared to what's happening.
And it's between two powerful women who I love the way like they kind of leave things. They both have like serious priorities that they're trying to straighten out for their different kingdoms and stuff. So, you know, it's kind of this arrangement of, yes, they love each other, but they've also got important stuff to do. So
yeah, I've got my job.
Right.
A lot of people rely on me. So
I am the queen of all.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about that. I know you listened to it. You read it, right?
Yes.
So can you tell me a little bit about the listening experience and then a little bit about, I know you, the difficulty of flipping through so many pages and seeing like a percentage tick up. So can you tell a little bit about your actual reading experience of the book?
Even slower listening to it. But I have to say the listening experience was nothing short of exquisite. The narrator did a really good job at using different accents for different regions. Mm-hmm. So since you are considering so many different like countries in this, it made it easier to pinpoint where different characters were from.
Yeah, and to tell characters apart, I'm sure.
Yes. So her narration was nothing short of delightful.
Okay.
It did mean that when I tried to read the maps to figure out where everything was geographically, I felt hoodwinked. Like... nothing was spelled how I thought they were spelled.
Oh,
there's some very awkward spelling things here and there where I'm like, wait, how is that pronounced? Like, and I just skip over it.
Like the Psychonese kingdom. I really thought that was going to start with a PSY.
Oh.
But it's okay. S-I-I. Like, I opened it and my son looked at it and was like, that's a lot of I's in that
name. That's a lot of I's in that word.
No, reading it, I remember when I first kind of looked into this book, not necessarily starting to read it, but looking into it, I found out that the author originally wanted to make it a duology, mm-hmm. but she didn't know where to stop it in the middle. So she said, screw it, we're putting it all together in one kind of brick. And I'm like, yeah. I'm so happy you did that because there's no real stop in the plot.
Yeah,
so once
sense.
I'm like sitting there and I'm like reading it, I'm like, okay, it's a slow process, but it's good. And it was so rewarding to read it in terms of like, I just read a 800 page book, yeah. this kind of thing. But the actual like process of reading it was really good, but sometimes there was like a 3-page lore drop and you're like, hold on, I wasn't prepared. I need to sit here, think about this, and then go into the lore. Because you do want to know it. It's so interesting. But sometimes you're getting in the plot, you're like, okay. And you're like, oh wait, I have to remember what's going on in the East for a second. Hold on.
I have to think back. Let me check my notes.
Yeah, literally, I constantly had my thumb in the glossary to look and check to see what characters were, because they also have it based on region, but then they also have like deceased people of said region. So you have
important deceased people.
Yes, you have to. So you have to clock like, okay, this person was important in the West, but they're misconceived in the East, and blah 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 blah. And yeah, it's a lot, but it's great.
This was the first time I had read a fantasy in probably ever that reminded me of my experience of reading Fellowship of the Ring.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
oh, yeah.
The setup was really intense. Like, probably the first half of the book was setting up for the larger plot. But the payoff for it was amazing. Like, the second half of the book, it just was fulfilling. Like, it mm-hmm. felt worth it. So,
are there any things that really jump out at you that you think are like selling points? Like, if you were trying to talk someone into reading this, you could say someone who likes high fantasy or someone who doesn't normally read high fantasy. Is there anything that you would say is a standout thing that you would recommend this book for?
I loved the writing in this book. In fact, I bookmarked some stuff because there are just some really cool quotes.
Oh, yes.
So I
mm-hmm.
wanted to read a couple.
Of course. Please.
One of them is at the very end of the book, and it doesn't give anything away.
This seems like a book ripe for highlighting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've seen people with like full tabs in it, and I'm like, yeah. I don't know how you did that. Like, to be honest, like, you have such, I could never.
So I feel like this is thematic for the book. Some truths, he said, are safest buried. Some castles are best kept in the sky. There's promise in tales that are yet to be spoken. Ooh. And another major theme of the book is when history fails to shed light on the truth, myth creates its own. And so you see that with so many of the different countries and their misconceptions about what originally happened with the Nameless One, whether or not you could trust any dragon, yeah. whether or not you could trust magic. Everybody has their own story of how this came to be.
Especially because it seems like this is something that's been brewing for 1,000 years. So what about you? Yeah. Anything that stands out that you would recommend this book?
So I'm typically not a person to even read fantasy. Mm-hmm. So this was like kind of the first big one that I was like,
You undertook a giant.
No, that was the thing where I had been told like, hey, there's a sapphic romance in it. And I was like, okay, maybe it's like, you know, we'll see how this goes. And then I was like, oh, I got myself in for something insane, but I loved it. You
yeah.
know? My only real other experience with high fantasy was like a few of the Witcher books, mm-hmm. which are also very much like tons of myths, all that whatever.
Yeah.
But reading this, it was just kind of what Leslie said. It was just such a payoff in the mm-hmm. end. It was a payoff for you having like gone through and fully enwrapped yourself in this entire story. And on top of that, just getting through an 800 page book is difficult
yeah.
sometimes.
Yes.
But no, it was just so fulfilling. It was just mm-hmm. so rewarding to read. And I've seen a bunch of really good reviews that are like immediately 5 stars. They give it 5 stars like 80 pages in. But then I've seen reviews where it was like, it was just a letdown. And I'm like, in what way? Like, I can't even conceive that happening. But no, yeah, it was just, in terms of like for people who don't read high fantasy, because I typically don't, it is very good, but please pace yourself. Don't read it in sprints like I did initially. Take your time with it, because initially I was reading like 100 pages, and then I got so burnt out on it because
yeah,
that's so much
that's
information.
A lot, especially if it's lore heavy.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
that's rough.
So then I was doing like 40 pages, maybe 20 pages before I go to bed. And I'm like, this is way better for me to do. Yeah.
Especially because the character, like, there is real character development that happens for most of the characters. I did not like Queen Sabran at first.
Oh, no.
And I felt like the author did a really good job at showing how a political figurehead could still be a pawn, because that's very much what she was. She was spoiled mm-hmm. and pampered to keep her in her place.
Yeah.
So seeing her kind of evolve from that was fascinating.
Yes.
But at the very beginning, I was just like, I'm really not sure about this.
It feels like what you were saying, like pacing yourself, if the world building is so good, and the myths around it and the pacing and everything, if everything is so good, as much as you want to be more in that world and meshed in it, I feel like when you pace yourself, you give yourself such a longer period of time to experience reading it. And this seems like a book, from what you have said, that the experience is part of the joy of reading it. So
yes.
Like,
yes.
Did you get a book hangover after this?
I'm still in a book hangover. I don't know about you.
I'm pretty sure I did, because I was just kind of like, I think immediately after finishing that book, I like didn't touch like a single book on my shelf for like 4 days. Like, yeah. I'm like, I'm not even going to look at it. I'm just done. And then I think it was like final season and finally ended. So I was just like, I'm literally just going to rot in my bed for 2 days and just not think about anything else.
So I have a question for you that I've stewed with a lot. As much as I love Ied's character, mm-hmm. I do feel like she's kind of too perfect. Did you feel that way too?
Yes and no. I was like, I really love her, but then sometimes I'm like, how is she hitting every single mark we need her to hit? Like, she is the, yeah. Like she's like the perfect character. And like, typically I don't like those characters. This is a really weird comparison, but Allison from Teen Wolf, the TV show.
Yes.
I never liked her because she was like too perfect and like mm-hmm. too good at everything she did. But with Ied, I was kind of like, it made more sense to me because she like really worked for it, and you don't really see it in the book, but you know it's there. So it made me feel a little bit better about it. But initially I was really kind of not thrown off, but very like, okay, she's going to be like the one that's going to handle like the majority of what's happening in this book, other than
the
like,
capable one.
Yeah. Basically she's the capable one, other than like maybe Thane, but she gets like banished early on, so like things like that happen.
So with Ied's character, is this a perfection just in like their skill and talent, or is this more of a, even the way they react to problems, like everything is like perfect?
To me, everybody else had a character flaw that wasn't distracting. Like, you still rooted for these people, mm-hmm. and you saw them do some really noble stuff, but Ied just seemed a little too perfect. Even though, don't get me wrong, she is still my favorite character. I didn't have the same visceral reaction to her that I did like to Rey from the Star Wars. Like,
oh yeah. My gosh, yeah.
But it did feel like everything she did, she handled exactly as she was supposed mm-hmm. to. And I don't know if that's fair or not. That's why I wanted to ask you.
I think it's because of the Priory, she kind of has to be like that, I think is what they're trying to imply. I can't really talk about the prequel because spoilers, but basically in the prequel book, A Day of Fallen Night, they actually like explore, like you have characters who live in the Priory, and it's a real breakdown of what actually occurs inside of that place. So it makes sense why she is so perfect.
Okay.
Like, it cleared it up a little bit more, because I completely understand what you're saying. She just essentially didn't have a flaw. Like, Nicklaus was an alcoholic and not a very good man. Sabran is Sabran?
Naive.
Sabran? Yeah.
Gosh.
I do recommend the book.
So is this, I haven't read the second book, and it's going to take me a little while before I have that reading stamina again.
Yeah, it's longer than this one.
Oh god.
By like 80 pages.
By 80 pages.
This book is 800 pages, make no mistake. Is it after or before?
It's 500 years before.
Oh wow. Okay.
It's a real prequel. It's basically, there are parts of this book that I like went back and checked. It's essentially, the prequel is the Dark Ages of this like world. It's the early 500s, whenever the Nameless One almost made a comeback but didn't, kind of thing. And it's whenever, because the Nameless One is this big dragon who lives underneath the world. The wyverns are worms or wyverns? Which ones were they?
So they just called all dragons in the West worms. It was wyverns were the ones that were tied to his power.
Oh, yes. Okay, you're correct. It's been 3 years since I read the book. But yes, basically in the prequel, the first of the wyverns come back. They come back 500 years before the Nameless One even is mentioned, which is like prior to the Orange Tree. So yeah, it's basically everybody's kind of like, hey, what's going on? And on top of all that, you have a lot of political stuff in the East rather than the West.
Okay.
And then you have way more interactions with the North, which is like barely mentioned in the first book. So I was kind of like, oh, we actually get to see like Kroth and all that. So yeah.
Okay. I was curious because I loved the way Priory ended, so I didn't want a continuation of that story. It felt perfect.
No, yeah. So. I truthfully want to read everything by Samantha Shannon, but I really hope she doesn't make a sequel, because I was really scared when I saw A Day of Fallen Night. I was like, oh no.
A sequel.
Yeah,
yeah, that's what I was afraid of too. Yeah.
But then it was like, it's a prequel where it's 500 years before. I was like, okay, this is going to be great. It's basically explaining a bit more of like the mythology, obviously, because it's like 500 years before. But at the same time, it's like, hey, this was the onstart to all the bad times that occurred in like the year like 1997, I think, is when it starts.
I think high fantasy is one of the only genres that can really do prequels in a way that doesn't feel forced, because you can get so far away from the original story that it doesn't feel like you are, that you know where it's going. A lot of times with prequels, I get really annoyed because I'm like, I know where this ends, though. Like, it ends literally where the other book started. But this one, like, 500 years before, like, we're talking about a world that is significantly different.
Very different.
Yeah, and that is really interesting because you still see all those through lines and connections. Like you said, you can still check the book, and, like, there are things that run through it, like, threads that connect them. But that's, like, us traveling back to the year, like, 1500.
Yeah.
And being like, oh, I don't know, it's going to be exactly the same. It will not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Oh, the onset of the plague also occurs during
Day
of Fallen Night.
Which that's a big deal for where Loth is sent.
Yes.
The Draconic Plague has kind of taken over that region. So that was one of the creepier parts of the
book. It's like, oh yeah, their fingertips go red and then they just start burning and you're like, oh, that's
cool.
Great.
Wow. That's nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Do y'all have anything else that you want to add? Anything? I can't think of anything else to ask that wouldn't go too deep into spoilies.
It's a long book, but it has plenty of action.
Yes.
And one thing I appreciated about it was, like, there are some key characters that die pretty early on. It's not one of those really soft hitting fantasies
where everybody
gets a happy ending, but it's not quite Game of Thrones level where
that's good. It feels realistic. It doesn't feel like, oh, someone's happy for a second, they're about to get murdered.
Yes.
The first major death that happened, I didn't actually believe that. It was like, there's no way this just happened.
Yeah, I sat there stunned.
I know. I was like, I think it's like 250, 300 pages into the book. So I'm not even halfway. And I'm like, wait, that character and like legitimately just died?
It's
like
a lovable character, too. Oh, so it's just
so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like that. I feel like a lot of epic fantasy I don't read because it does tend toward the grimdark, like, everyone's unhappy and no one will ever, filth everywhere. Like, even after you take a shower, you're still covered in dirt somehow. Like, this feels like it's in between, where it feels like an actual Middle Ages. Like, it's not great, but there are good things that still exist.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So, as long as there's nothing else to add, I think that might be it for us. I think we have covered the breadth and depth of Priory of an Orange Tree.
Yes. Thank you. This is one of those examples of why we started this podcast. It's a book that when I read it, I was like, I need to tell somebody about it.
Literally tell every single one of my friends, I'm like, you have to read My Favorite Brick. And they're like, I'm telling you, I love you, I'm not touching that thing.
Yeah. What if you cut it into three different books and then like rebind it and be like, hey, I have this cool trilogy that you can read? Because I feel like that would help. I feel like
it
the problem would be, where would you stop it?
That you just stop it wherever.
Yeah.
Just randomly. Just randomly. And they'll be like, it was so weird. They just stopped in the middle of a conversation and be like, you want book two? Like, want to know where that conversation goes?
No, real.
Yeah. Because I think literally just people will read like trilogies that are like 300 or 400 pages each book. But I think having it all together is the really intimidating thing. So I would argue, just like you said, to savor it, read it as if it were just two or three books combined.
Because it basically is with all the points of view. Each point of view essentially is its own book.
Exactly. So don't think of it as one big book. Think of it as a compendium that
log that in my Goodreads challenge.
That's right. Three books. No, that was like my one of like two books that was like, on StoryGraph, it's like, if you read a 500-plus page book, it was like my one of two. I was like, we got it.
Just got it, baby. I would be mad. I'd be emailing StoryGraph like, you need to have an 800-plus.
No. Like, it was like 804 pages. And I was like, oh my gosh, if they just had a higher category, this would be so good.
Right? Just like 500-plus and then 800 with like a little gold medal next to it.
Like, I actually read this.
This is a marathon of reading.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for letting me chat about this book at length.
Yes.
And stay tuned next week for more fantastic book recommendations.
Bye.